Sportsnet today. Listen on the air, online, on the Sportsnet app, and always on your smart speaker. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
I'm not going to lie, in the summertime, and even at the beginning of the year, I thought I was going to be a Canuck, and I thought I was going to be a Canuck for life, to be honest with you, and just things didn't work out that way.
Welcome everyone to Sportsnet Today. I'm Peter Klein from Daily Hive Calgary, Game Over Calgary, and Couch Potato Diary. He is Aaron Vickers, also from Daily Hive and NHL.com. There's someone on the text line is like, we get it, enough Canuck stuff. We're tying it in with the Flames and how it affects Calgary today. But yeah, the big news of the day, a thriller of a deal pulled off between the Canucks and Islanders yesterday.
You went there right off the hop,
yeah. Well, I was so inspired by my accidental pun of putting a bow on the show yesterday.
You're that, two for two now.
Yeah.
You boys on a heater. You're all over the place, except for in one particular spot where we'll get to eventually. But
spot where it matters.
Look at you, back in the chair, running things, making puns.
Yep.
Oh, well-oiled machine over here. Let's go.
I would like to say I actually hit it three times yesterday because I also had a Danger Zone reference when we were playing that with going into the NFL conversations.
And so I missed it?
You did. And I'll be honest, a little hurt by that. But yes, this is Sportsnet Today. The fill-ins edition, Pat, is still on vacation, although apparently can't escape some form of Calgary Flames contact as he is off gallivanting across this globe. So it is Peter Klein and Aaron Vickers. I'm only here for the next couple of days. Vickers is here all week, I think. I don't know. I quit paying attention. But coming up on the show today, we are going to talk about the Flames. We'll be doing some report card stuff on how this season has gone so far. Spoiler alert, it's been all right. Also, we're going to talk Flames prospects, and we'll get into the gambling side of things with Jason Logan coming up at 5:30. But Aaron, I guess we'll start with the new news that has come out today, or the new reports, I guess, that have come out today around this Canucks situation, and that is that the trade that they got from the Islanders, apparently they didn't shop that around. They were just like, yes, sold, and that was it, which seems like an odd way to go about trading your franchise, one of the franchise cornerstones and the captain of your team.
I would say yes and no. Yes, if you're dealing with any of the 30 other teams. No, if you're dealing with Lou Lamoriello, because the second you go to the Boston Bruins, for example, or the New Jersey Devils, or the Dallas Stars, all rumored to be poking around Bo Horvat before being traded to the New York Islanders yesterday, that gets back to Lou. Not even gets back to Lou. If somebody from the Boston Bruins, for example, leaks out that this is the supposed return for Bo Horvat, guess what? The New York Islanders are out.
Right.
They're hanging up on you. They're folding their can, to use a poker term that really doesn't apply here for some reason. They are saying, we are taking our deal off the table. Have fun going elsewhere where you might not get as good a deal. I understand it if you're dealing with Lou Lamoriello, because the second anything leaks out of any camp, it doesn't have to be the Vancouver camp, certainly doesn't have to be the New York Islanders camp, but once those names are out there, and Atu Ratu's name is now in the media, Anthony Beauvillier's name is now out in the media,
right,
Bo Horvat has been officially linked to the New York Islanders, it's over. It's done. So while from a GM standpoint and a Vancouver standpoint, going, why wouldn't you take this offer to another team, see if the other team can gas it up a little bit, drive the price up, start a bidding war. At the same time, the second you do that, I think the New York Islanders hang up the phone and stop returning your calls.
And that is absolutely fair. And I could totally see Lou saying, like, this deal is done when this conversation is over, right? Like, this phone hangs up, you're not getting this deal again. But for the Canucks, I don't know if this deal was so good that it was like, look, we have to take it now with still a month to go to the trade deadline. Like, this is a fine return for your captain. But I almost would have called their bluff. Like, we're not, you really, you guys, 2 points out of a playoff spot, won't do this deal again in 2 weeks because we went to another team. I would have called their bluff on that.
Well, that's the game of chicken you play when you're dealing with one of the most experienced, most veteran general managers in the NHL, who's got a long history of being no nonsense. I think back to an Andrew Ladd trade. I'm trying to remember the details. It's not coming to me off the top of the head, but it got nixed because the names got out. And right. Lou Lamoriello said, you know what? This isn't how we play ball. We're not doing this. This trade is now off the table. Go find yourselves another dance partner because we're not happy with you. So from that perspective, I get it. At the same time, you mentioned the return. And I'm super curious because this is going to be one of those trades that isn't measured by a stopwatch. Well, it might be if you're the New York Islanders and suddenly Bo Horvat doesn't re-sign with you in the offseason.
Yeah.
But I can see scenarios quite easily where it's an absolute win for the Islanders. It could be a win for the Vancouver Canucks. And it could very easily be a loss for either side. So I'm curious, again, heading into the season, if there is an extension, if there isn't an extension for Bo Horvat and the New York Islanders, if a guy like Atu Ratu or a first-round pick end up flourishing or if they end up busting. Yeah. I'm very curious to see particularly how the Vancouver side goes. One, because they're within the Pacific Division, and these are players slash picks that the Calgary Flames could see down the road. And I'm curious, the text line, hit us up, 960-960, what the comparable package from the Calgary Flames would have been. Not saying they were going to go hunt Bo Horvat, but just curious what the equivalent is of Anthony Beauvillier, Atu Ratu, and obviously the conditional first is kind of the conditional first with both teams being in a similar spot. But I'll be very curious to see how this trade plays out when you talk about losing your franchise face, one of them anyways, and your captain in Bo Horvat.
Yeah, and I think the other interesting part of this is Beauvillier is under contract only for one more year. So it's not like the Canucks would be immune to just flipping him too, right?
No, that could actually be a case that we, again, see in 2-3 weeks right before the trade deadline on March 3rd, where he's young enough and has been in the league long enough that he's not that far away from being an unrestricted free agent, despite being, what, 24, 25? He's on 25. The younger side. So there's an opportunity for him to limit, I guess, the return or the upside on this deal. Again, though, I don't necessarily think that's going to be an instance where the Vancouver Canucks are oblivious to the fact that he's a pending unrestricted free agent, and they would address that, whether it be internally or externally via trade, to recoup even more assets.
Although, if anyone would be oblivious to that, it would be the Canucks organization, who's kind of mishandled.
I mean, that was a layup. That was a tap-in. That was an empty netter. Let's not pick on the Vancouver Canucks today, unless it's coming from your side. But it's been a tumultuous time, to say the least, for the Vancouver Canucks. And I think that perhaps they've lost the benefit of the doubt. Is that fair?
I would say they did that a while ago, yes. This is Sportsnet Today from the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio, brought to you by Doug Lacey's Basement Systems. We are your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. We are all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com. So the Canucks do have a few more parts that could be traded away. A few of the names that have been out there over the last weeks, months, hours, whatever. Brock Besser's name has certainly been out there for a while. We have heard Luke Shen's name basically since he signed with the Canucks. I'm missing one. Thatcher Demko is also available. I would suggest that is not one or an area where the Calgary Flames would be shopping. But the other two, salary cap wise, it would be a difficult fit for Besser. But I think the other two do fit a need. I think this team would benefit in Calgary from a top six forward, as everyone would. But I also think that Luke Shen would fit in perfectly with what the Flames need on the blue line as well. I could see the, with all due respect, the scrap heap of what is left in Vancouver being an area that the Flames may want to pick away from. Does that turn the Canucks now into an interesting trade, I guess, destination for the Calgary Flames?
Well, I think it certainly does with at least one of the names you mentioned. Certainly not all of them. I can't imagine a scenario where Thatcher Demko is on the Calgary Flames radar right now. And it's almost crazy for me to hear you say Thatcher Demko's name has been out there, because I look at the Vancouver Canucks goaltending pool and it's like, okay, well, we've done the Spencer Martin experience. We've seen Colin Delia. What's the plan here? At the same time, they've been out without Thatcher Demko, who's missed a lot of time because of injury. Wonder if that's a scenario where Vancouver Canucks take an honest look in the mirror and go, we've been without him. If we can maximize the return now, it might set us up a little bit better for the years in the future.
Yeah.
But I look to a guy like Luke Shen, 6'2", 225-pound defenseman, shoots right. He's had almost a career year to this point with 16 points in 49 games. That's not what he's going to be known for. And that's not what he's going to be brought in to do if he became a member of the Calgary Flames. I'm curious about the ask on him. I wonder if he does not fetch a first-round pick. I can see a dozen teams. I know it's going to be steep, but every team in the league is looking for a guy like Luke Shen that can play, you know, 16, 17 minutes of honest, hard hockey, who has been one of the lone bright spots for the Vancouver Canucks this season. There's no shortage of teams. They're going to be lining up for a defenseman who gives you stability, who's moved the puck well, and that, yes, moved the puck well, Luke Shen, provides veteran leadership, has a cup, is cheap, and he's on an expiring contract, if I'm not mistaken. So you add up all those elements, there's no reason why there shouldn't be a dozen teams placing calls to the Vancouver Canucks right now, or already talking to the Vancouver Canucks right now about number two Luke Shen.
Yeah, the cheap part is the part that I think really draws the maybe the most return for Vancouver, right? Because you look at cap friendly right now, half the league already wouldn't be able to fit him in just straight up. So I think the lack of funding that is required to bring in a Luke Shen, I think makes that all the more valuable. I'm still not giving up a first round pick for Luke Shen. And look, I think like he has had a tremendous season in Vancouver, one of the lone bright spots. And apparently that's all they're looking to trade right now is bright spots. But he has been one of the lone bright spots for the Canucks. And like you said, he checks off so many boxes. He's one of like 8 right-handed defensemen in this league, apparently, because everyone is looking for a right shot defenseman these days. He plays that playoff style. He has played that playoff style in the playoffs before, 31 career playoff games. He, I think, really does fit everything that you're looking for from a Flames perspective. However, if we get a release saying that the Flames have traded a first-round pick for Luke Shen, I'm going to lose my mind.
Now, I'm not advocating that the Flames go out and spend that capital on Luke Shen. I'm just saying that that's when once you get into a bidding war, once there's a competition, the market is going to be set, and I don't think it's necessarily been set for defensemen just yet. But general managers in the NHL are known to make the most mistakes at two points in the season. One is July 1st or whatever the equivalent happens to be because of COVID and pushing seasons back. Mm-hmm. The second is at the NHL trade deadline where nothing is cheap. Nothing is free. Nobody's throwing you life preservers. Everybody's bombing anchors at you trying to sink you.
Yeah.
And if you get into a situation where three or four teams are very, very serious about thinking that Luke Shen's the guy that, this is going to sound weird, but Luke Shen's the guy that can put you over the top, or at least give you a significant competitive advantage when you're slotting 1-6 on the blue line, somebody's going to make a mistake and somebody's going to overpay. We see it every year, and Luke Shen is a prime candidate for it.
Yeah, no, that like that, someone is going to just say, you know what? Bleep it. We're going for it. Look, first round pick for Luke Shen, gladly. We're not even going to protect the thing. We don't care because we're going to be hoisting the Stanley Cup anyway because we got Luke GD Shen coming in here to save this franchise. Someone is going to do that. Well, maybe not again, maybe not a first, but you're right. Like that is the time where there are wild overpays in those areas. Like, and we've seen before it pay out, right? Like Tampa Bay, it was Tampa Bay who traded a first for Goodrow.
Yes, but he had term as well, and he slotted back into their lineup.
Right.
So, and I understand a move like that is a lot, but I understand that move because the Tampa Bay Lightning at that time were a cap poor team. They had no room, and this was a cost control asset that was coming in that was going to give them multiple years. So I understand that. And when you're picking somewhere between 28 and 32, and it just so happened to be 32, maybe you're a bit more comfortable with that timeline and everything and having a player that can make an immediate impact versus waiting 4 or 5 years on a guy that has a 30% chance of making it to the NHL. But somebody's going to look at Luke Shen and somebody's going to overpay because, again, cheap contract, right shot defenseman, has size, has playoff experience, checks all the boxes for one of those depth defensemen that you need on a run.
Well, and like if it works out, banners fly forever, right? That's something I've always said. Like if it works out, the banner only says 2022-2023 Stanley Cup champions. It doesn't say 2022-2023 Stanley Cup champions, but had to give up a first round pick for Luke Shen, which might have been an overpay, although he did provide some good value on the back end. Like it's just the championship part that is up there that teams are interested in. I am interested in Brock Besser as well. I think he is someone, again, looking at it from a Flames standpoint, cap wise, it might be a bit tricky. But he is someone who can help solve a lot of the goal scoring problems that this team has. He's one of those guys who, to kind of steal a basketball term, can create his own shot and can kind of score from distance. Like that shot scores anywhere in the offensive zone. And I don't think the Flames necessarily have a ton of that right now. I think that would be a really intriguing option for Calgary again, if you could make the salary work for that. I think from the Flames standpoint, I understand, and maybe this isn't exactly what I would do, but I think from the Flames standpoint, you decided the road you were going down when you made the moves that you made this offseason. It could have been a ton of picks and prospects for Tkachuk. Instead, you wanted to stay competitive. This is now the game that you are playing. I think you have to kind of double down on that, and I think a Brock Besser with the Calgary Flames checks a few boxes as well.
We know that if Brad Treliving is going to sacrifice assets, whether it be picks or prospects, his preference is bringing in guys with term. but I said no to Pat Steinberg, and I'm going to say no to Peter Klein, because Brock Besser still has two seasons remaining after this one at $6.65 million, and the Calgary Flames aren't in a great position to absorb that right now. And yes, the Vancouver Canucks ate a little bit of Bo Horvat's contract to go to Long Island. However, that's an expiring contract. Yeah. That's done. That's a no-brainer to facilitate the deal. I can't imagine a scenario where Patrick Alvin decides to eat 25% of $6.65 million over the course of 2.5 seasons, because the Calgary Flames are right up against it. They had to sacrifice a first-round pick to move Sean Monahan out to make room for Nazem Kadri. Now, you're going to have to do something similar again in order to fit Brock Besser into your salary structure for next season. They're at $80 million right now already with the contracts that they owe for the 2023-2024 season. I don't see necessarily how Brock Besser can slide into that, even though he checks a lot of boxes for what the Calgary Flames need. Yes, the Calgary Flames need scoring. No, Luke Shen's not going to get that for you. We saw that on the text line. However, $6.65 million when you're already at above 80 and you're flirting with already being over the cap, whatever it's finally set at, you've still got a lot of contracts to fill out, a lot of roster spots to fill out, and you're just not going to be able to do that with $6.65 million of Brock Besser.
But he's really good.
Is he?
You can pencil him in for 20 every year, at least 20. He's flirted with 30 before. And again, that's on a Canucks team that isn't exactly thriving. So I think he's really good. I think he has been a touch held back in Vancouver. And not that this has been the place to unlock everyone's offensive potential lately, but I do think that he helps solve a lot of things. Look, you're right. It wouldn't be fiscally responsible, but it'd be fun.
I mean, yes, it would be fun. No, it would not be fiscally responsible. No, the Vancouver Canucks have not been a breeding ground for great offense this season, but Brock Besser would say, or defense, wow. Wow. That is Peter Klein doing the pistol whipping there. But Brock Besser got, or not Brock Besser, Bo Horvat got to 31 before leaving, and Brock Besser just, to me, doesn't scratch the itch enough, even though the Calgary Flames could use a top nine forward on the right side that, you know, projects out in his career to be a 30-goal scorer. I mean, I'd love it, but it doesn't make sense. And if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense, Peter Klein. You can boo me on the text line, 960-960 for that one.
All right, let's get to the text line again, 960-960. Once again, a couple people telling me how awesome I am. I greatly appreciate that. Your check's in the mail. For the equivalent trades for the Bo Horvat trade. Thank you very much. Someone suggesting Mangiapane, Zari, and a first. I mean,
yes and no. It's weird. My initial reaction was no.
Right, and then the more you think about it,
Not last year's 35 goal Andrew Mangiapane.
No,
but this year's 10-ish goal Andrew Mangiapane kind of makes sense. Connor Zary to a degree fits that Aturatu formula, and again, the first round pick is going to be the first round pick.
Yeah,
another one, Matthew Phillips and a third for Luke Shen. Not quite that. However, I don't think Matthew Phillips and a third gets you Luke Shen.
No, probably not. Although you could argue, again, the Canucks have said they're not in this for the picks, right? They're looking for prospects. So you could maybe, I don't know, talk them into it or swindle them into, hey, look at this. I mean, Daryl hates the kid, but I mean, this is the dude that you guys want, right? Like a kind of a guy who hasn't necessarily fit in his one spot, albeit in an extremely short sample size, but a guy who hasn't really fit in his spot, but still profiles to maybe be a quality National Hockey League player. Like, it kind of fits what the Vancouver Canucks are going for. Again, if the Flames trade Matthew Phillips for Luke Shen, I'm going to lose my mind, though. Like, I get he's playing well this year.
There stands a very reasonable chance that you lose Matthew Phillips for nothing in the offseason. He's going to become a pending unrestricted free agent because he hasn't hit a games played threshold at his age. There's a very good chance that he doesn't come back to this organization. I mean, so if your sunk cost on him is already gone and you're looking at a third round pick for Luke Shen, if you have no plans to play the kid,
yeah,
put him in a situation where he's going to get some ice time at the NHL level. And then suddenly your deal looks at a third round pick for Luke Shen. I think you do that all day.
And I have been saying on the other platforms that I'm on, I'm game over. If you're not going to play the kid, trade him. Because like his value is never going to be higher. This is a fun conversation to have with Sandra coming on in like 8 minutes. But his value is never going to be higher to like in a trade than it is right now. So
I just think every organization has, to one degree or another, a Matthew Phillips in it. I don't think he's the difference between sweetening a deal and losing that deal without him in it, to be perfectly honest.
Okay, that is very fair. no, we're not going to be bringing pro wrestling talk back. Brock Besser, is the most injury prone player on that team, who wasn't Jacob Markstrom. He has had some injury issues. I'm not saying it is perfect. I just think he's extremely talented, and I think this is a Flames team that needs quite a bit more scoring punch. And with all due respect, I don't know if Milan Lucic in a top six role is necessarily accomplishing that. I think Brock Besser in those spots would be very helpful as well.
Would Vladimir Tarasenko tickle you at all? How about Anthony Duclair? Like, who would be your go-to at this point if it's not Brock Besser? I mainly look at guys that have a pending unrestricted free agent status at the end of the year. They don't complicate your books near as much as a guy like Brock Besser, who has term. Right. Those have been two names that I've not continually tossed out there, but I could see them being fits in the short term if you wanted to make a move and bolster your top nine. I'm not necessarily in favor of sacrificing the assets that it would take to get there, given that the Flames have burned so hot and cold so far this season. Again, nothing longer than a 3-game winning streak this year. But if you got to make a move, I don't wonder if those names make more sense than Brock Besser.
To me, the target has been Timo Meier. I think a big power forward type is kind of what Daryl loves. And I think that Timo Meier kind of plays that style. He's only 6 feet. Hey, he kind of feels bigger to me. But anyway, I think he can play a style of play that the coach would appreciate. I think he would utilize him quite well. A dude who has put up 30 goals in the past is going to again this season. Timo Meier would kind of be the target I would have. He's an RFA at the end of the year, so it does kind of complicate things a touch, but it is still something that maybe you can work with. So he's been the guy who he's been the apple of my eye going into this trade season.
The rumored return the San Jose Sharks want on Timo Meier is a first-round pick, a top prospect, and an established NHLer. That's their requirement, allegedly. That's what's been bounced around in the media a little bit. So you're not looking at something that's completely different, I don't think, from Bo Horvat. And the caveat with Timo Meier is, yes, he's a restricted free agent. Yes, you do have some control as to whether or not he's going to be on your team next season, as opposed to just using him as a pure rental and not qualifying him, because his qualifying offer is $10 million.
Oh, that's right.
So how are you going to work that?
Contract.
It's the Matthew Tkachuk clone contract, basically, where you go short term, you backload it. Last year is the qualifying year, and it's going to be $10 million. That's not doable if you're the Calgary Flames under their current cap situation. Now, again, there could be moves to be made.
Yeah, they've been creative before, right?
They've been creative before, but this is a capped out league. So you're running out of avenues to tap into in order to, hey, eat this salary. Hey, take this. And to be perfectly honest, the Calgary Flames don't have a lot of contracts where it's like, oh, shuttle this off for a first round pick now. Move this guy and send a second round pick for future considerations along with it. I don't see how the Calgary Flames could make a Timo Meier offer work beyond the balance of the 30-some-odd games, plus playoffs, you hope.
All right, so we're going to table the Flames discussion. We're going to have more talk about the Flames coming up. We also have some conversations around the baby Flames in a matter of moments. But first, we have to get to, speaking of money, it's time to talk about some personal finances of our own here, Aaron.
Yes, it is time for Best Bets, brought to you by Bodog.net. Find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Hashtag make a play. Free play only, 18+. Play responsibly. And uh-oh, Kleiner. You're doing a great job of filling in for Pat on Best Bets while he's gone.
Josh Morrissey had an amazing game yesterday. It just didn't include any assists.
Yeah, I don't know how to tell you this, but you're 0-for to start our little Best Bets contest. Your boy Josh Morrissey did have 2 points against the St. Louis Blues, but sure they were both goals.
Yeah.
Jordan Kyrou, blanked.
Nothing. Nada.
Now, I said on Monday I was going to run the table and go 10-for-10.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go 10-for-10.
No.
Because I also missed. Thanks to Connor Hellebuck's 24 saves, I needed 25.5. But if we do figure out this goat mask, which you already have started to hedge, saying that this might not be a thing that could work, and I would too if I was 0-2. I would losing. But Justin Falk, over one and a half shots, he had 4.
Oh, just a machine.
So killed it.
Yeah.
Of course, I didn't bet it in real life like an idiot. So what are we doing today, Kleiner? I'm going Brady Tkachuk against the Montreal Canadiens, slamming the over on 3.5 shots. He's hitting back-to-back games. Is in 67% of the time. His line's at minus 160. That's one. Second one, I'm going Anthony Mantha. He's only got a 1.5 line on shots. I love the shot line. I'm a shot line from here until eternity. I'm going the over at minus 145, which is actually a little bit better than Tkachuk. But I think it's a layup against the Columbus Blue Jackets team that is the second worst in the NHL. They give up 35.1 shots per game, and Mantha hasn't missed on that line against the Columbus Blue Jackets this season. 56% on the year. Where are you going?
I am going with, again, in your world, I'm going with Andrei Svechnikov's shots over 2.5. He had 6 against Boston, 5 against San Jose in his last couple of games, taking on a Kings team tonight that I think struggles a little bit defensively. I'm liking myself some okay. Svechnikov over 2.5 shots. And Alex DeBrincat just to score at any time against a Montreal Canadiens team
Ooh.
Who has like 3 healthy players on their entire roster. So I'm going to go DeBrincat to score at any point at plus 105.
As a guy that's seen Svechnikov at 3.5 a lot this season, him at 2.5, I think that is juicy. DeBrincat, again, you mentioned it. I don't even know who Montreal's icing right now after Nick Suzuki and Josh Anderson, but that could be intriguing as well. You need these to hit.
I do.
You're losing.
I am behind.
I'm one up on you. Miles behind.
Look, if I'm the Islanders right now, like the Islanders are further back than I am, and they just made an all-in move. So, I mean, I think I am well within my rights to make this one.
Is DeBrincat your all-in move?
Yes. Yeah, let's go with that. I think Svechnikov's kind of my layup, to be honest.
All right, fair enough. This is Best Bets, brought to you by Bodog.net. Find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Hashtag make a play. Free play only, 18+. Play responsibly.
All right, well, we just tried to trade half of them, but it has been an interesting year for the Calgary Wranglers. We will get a full recap on how everything has gone with the voice of the Wranglers, Sandra Priscina, coming up next here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Back to Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Today. I'm Peter Klein from Daily Hive. He is Aaron Vickers, also from Daily Hive, as our 3-day trial to see if we should start a podcast over there continues. Joining us now is the voice of the Calgary Wranglers, who is apparently having some issues with the headphones. It is Sandra Priscina. Sandra, how are you today?
I think I'm doing well. What are we good here? Yeah, thumbs up.
Can you hear me?
I know, like, I'm doing great.
I can hear you. Yeah, that's a little loud. Hold on.
I didn't get the memo. I was supposed to wear red, apparently. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, you really missed out on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
try to step that up.
Black and white suits my personality a little bit better, I guess.
But thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. How are you guys?
Doing well. Yeah. It's everyone's been very nice to me the last couple of days. So I've greatly appreciated people being nice to me on the text line, because that wasn't necessarily always the case. Bringing you in to talk about the Calgary Wranglers, obviously the first year in Calgary, people are very excited, and everyone wants all the players called up all of the time. One of the names that we had for a while in the discussions was Jacob Pelche. He is now with the Calgary Flames. A two-parter here as I ramble on. One, what did you see from him in his time with the Wranglers? And two, what have you thought of his time with the Flames so far?
Well, it was a very deserved call-up, absolutely. And I think he got out to a bit of a slow start with the Wranglers, only because going into training camp for the Flames, there had been this discussion, okay, there's a top 9 spot available. And I wonder if that played into the back of his mind, knowing, okay, I have this opportunity to maybe solidify a spot with a big club. And I think if you asked him, he'd probably be disappointed with the fact that he didn't stay up with the team and maybe didn't make an impression, even with all the PTOs that were there. So he went back down to the Wranglers, and just like the rest of the team, there was an adjustment period, because don't forget, first year in Calgary, you're playing in an NHL building, an NHL market. The fact that Daryl Sutter is essentially watching you every night if he's not on the road with the big club. And then you're also the ownership eyes are always on you. Brad Treliving, Brad Pascal, they're always watching you. So I think just he, like the rest of the team, took a little bit just to get their boots into the ground and figure out what kind of a team they are and how to adjust to this market. And once he did, it was no looking back. He just looked incredible and adjusted and has been able to play in all situations, 200-foot game, penalty killer, power play. Obviously, you see his statistics. He still leads the team in power play goals, even though he's been away for, what, 4 games, I think so, when he was with the Flames. So Not surprised that he's looked good on the second line. He just slides in basically everywhere. And the thing is, he didn't look out of place on the third line either when Darryl had him playing there. So he's one of those jigsaw pieces that you can essentially put anywhere. And I think he's lived up to his bill. You want to see him get a point pretty soon. He's been close. I mean, he's been very close. And the nice thing about him is he goes into dirty areas. He doesn't shy away from any physicality. I think he looks like an NHLer.
Mm-hmm. So the Calgary Flames broke for the All-Star break / bye week. They're off from January 28th to February 5th. Pretty convenient because the Wranglers don't get a break until February 3rd to February 9th. So when the Calgary Flames hit the road to go play the New York Rangers at Madison Square Garden on February 6th, is Jacob Pelche on a plane? Or is he here in Calgary?
I think he's on a plane. I don't think after these two games versus the Condors, dependent on how the Flames season goes. So let's take that part out of the equation. I don't think we see him in Wrangler silks until the postseason, just depending on how everything finishes with the Flames. But obviously the Wranglers, I mean, you look at the AHL standings today and they're in first place. So we know the way that this season is going. I don't see them dropping off at any point. So they'll make a postseason run. I would love if Jacob Pelche is there, but then I think Flames fans would love if he's on a playoff run in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I think I have to obviously promote the product. Come to the games versus the Condors Thursday and Friday. Maybe this is the last time you see him in a Wranglers uniform.
I've known you for about a decade now. That's the closest to a flex that you'll do. Yeah, don't even need him. First place, don't even need him. But I know that's not what you were saying.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite figure out why there was a hesitancy with the big club and putting him in, because he kind of sat and watched for a little bit. And you watch him out there, he does everything that you would assume a Darryl Sutter guy would do, right? Like you said, he gets into the bad areas. You want him to play well defensively, he can do that. Offensively, yeah. Power play, sure. Penalty kill, why not? He does all those things. Like, if the dude was my size, he would be on the top line getting 25 minutes a night. And I feel like he is starting to kind of win over the NHL coaching staff a little bit.
I think so. And he does exactly what you want him to do. You say this line is going to achieve this on this shift, he'll do that. And what I think is such a good fit with the duo of Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri is you got two players, one that loves to shoot the puck and one that loves to pass the puck, and he can be the perfect sandwich in that unit.
Another player who has been the center of a lot of conversations around the Calgary Flames this season is Matthew Phillips. We joked off the air. I tried to trade him to Vancouver during the last segment, but it has been everywhere from bring this kid up, put him with Jonathan Huberdeau, and let's roll to, again, sending him and a third-round pick to the Canucks for Luke Shen. For Matthew Phillips, you're around this team quite a bit. How have you noticed him handling? Because this has to be a weird season for him. Like you said, with all the NHL eyes that are around you, he's playing very, very well. He goes up to the NHL, doesn't necessarily get the longest crack. Now he's back in the AHL. How has he kind of handled this whole situation?
First of all, to the Canucks, PK? Boo.
Look, we were just talking. Boo. They're in the news. So
okay, fair. He's been great.
I'll trade him anywhere.
I think back to that opening two-game set versus Coachella where the team was just trying to figure itself out. There was one player who already had it figured out, and that was Matthew Phillips. Mm-hmm. He just knows how to play in big moments. He knows how to score. He can score down low. He can score on the rush. He can do exactly what you want him to do. He's just like a video game. And I'd never really seen him in person. And he gets decked by a 200-pound guy, and he pops back up on his feet. He's not afraid to muck it up in scrums.
Yeah.
So he does everything you want him to do, and he hasn't disappointed at this level, and I think he's thrived with the pressure here. I always call him the Calgary kid, because when's the last time somebody from Calgary has had this kind of an impact on a hockey team in this city? So he's really taken it to heart, and maybe he knows. He knows he's a UFA at the end of the year. Maybe he knows that this could – I don't want to speak for him. I certainly don't know what his future entails with this organization, but he just loves the pressure of being the Calgary kid.
Yeah.
What does he have to prove, if anything, at the American Hockey League level at this point? He's got 24 goals in 36 games, 46 points. This isn't the first year that he's exploded onto the scene and has been a top 20 scorer in the league. What's what's left for him to accomplish? If he has a to-do list, is there anything he hasn't checked off at this point?
Win the Calder Cup, I guess, would be the only thing. And that's a team award, but he would obviously want to be one of the key contributors to a deep playoff run, which could potentially lead to a championship. I certainly don't want to look that far ahead. I think this team is very talented, and he's a sum of the parts. But at the AHL, on an individual level, I don't know what else he has to do. And do you want him to be like a Rocco Grimaldi or a Tynan type player who just plays in the AHL? No, I think he has things to give that he can do at an NHL level, but he has to be put in a position to succeed because, unfortunately, you can't change size, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm with both of you. Like, if this is a video game, he's kind of beat this level, right? Mm-hmm. Like, again, aside from team accomplishments, he's kind of, like Aaron said, checked all these boxes. I do wish that there was a bit more of a crack given to him with the big roster. And I also think that this conversation, well, he's not really a fourth line guy. A fourth liner now is different than a fourth liner even 5 years ago, but certainly 10, 20 years ago. And we've seen, like, Andrew Mangiapane started in a bottom six role. And now, I guess, technically, he's still on the third line. But, like, he has progressed his way into being a top six level player. Same thing with Dylan Dubé. Like, you're allowed to develop players at the NHL roster as well. And I get frustrated with a guy like Matthew Phillips because, like, he's not as well as he is playing. And I'm sure that there is learning experiences that he's taking from this. But this isn't helping him grow at any point, if that's making any sense.
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. And I think with Darryl, what we've learned throughout the years is you have to pay your dues. And right. you mentioned the two best examples in Andrew Mangiapane and Dylan Dubé, who's now playing on the first line and being effective in his role. And I think it was Darryl maybe a month ago, a couple of weeks ago, that said that Dylan Dubé is the most improved player on the roster,
yep.
right?
Yep.
And that's because he did what he had to do, and now he's proving himself at a top line level.
Yeah. With all the players who've been called up, and as much as we've kind of been frustrated sometimes as Flames watchers that there aren't enough of the kids getting enough of the shot, that there have been a few players kind of graduate from the Wranglers to the Flames, that leaves open areas for players to step up. So in the absences of Pelche and briefly Phillips and guys like that, who have kind of stepped into those roles as the next ones up with the Wranglers?
The player that's actually impressed me the most is Ben Jones.
Okay.
I didn't know what to expect from him coming into his contract with the Flames, had a couple of seasons in Henderson, put up okay numbers. He had a really good junior career in Niagara, but I didn't know how that would translate here to Mitch Love's team, and he has been absolutely lights out. He's probably going to have the best pro career that he's had in his, you know, young tenure as a professional. So he's really impressed me. He bounces up and down the lineup. He can play on the fourth line if he needs to. He can play on the first line, which he has done as well. But listen, the key and the cog of this team is the captain. And he came in as, at that time, the only player over the age of 30, knowing that this is probably his retirement deal and he's coming back to Southern Alberta and things are going to come full circle. And I just think back to December 21st when they played Ontario and he suited up in his 1,000th AHL game. I'd never seen, to at this point as a member of the media, somebody get a silver stick.
Mm.
And just see all of the family that was there. And it's just like, I hate to get all kumbaya about sports stories, but this is what it is. Like, it does take a village.
Yeah.
And now he's the leader of the village that's leading this group. And Kevin Rooney put it really nicely at the end of the game. They had only played maybe four or five games together. And he said, I feel like I've known this guy my whole life. So they call him Dad in the dressing room. So they feed off of his energy. He leads by example. He blocks pucks. He plays shorthanded. He scores shorthanded goals. He does everything, and he is the key piece of this team.
Well, moving from Dad, I want to ask you about a couple of kids then.
Sure.
And how do you compare and contrast what you've seen out of Connor Zary and Cole Schwint to this point in the season?
I think Cole Schwint has come as advertised. He can play as a winger, he can play as a center, can take important draws, and he just fits in pretty much anywhere. Connor Zary is one of those players that I didn't realize he was such a good puck distributor until I saw him in person. You see the statistics, but you don't really know how good he is as a playmaker. Really likes the puck on his stick. He's okay with just cruising in his own zone, taking it through the neutral zone, and then dishing it off on the rush. So he's been intriguing to watch, and he's the only player who suited up in every game for the Wranglers this season. So Mitch Love, I think he leans on him a lot in a lot of different situations, and he's not afraid of putting up points.
he is one who, when the Flames were going through kind of a bit of a dry spell and everyone was calling everyone up, right? Like all the fans want. And I was like, yeah, Zari and Pelche and Phillips, like all these guys, bring them up all at the same time. Audie James had Mike Gould on Game Over Calgary. And Mike was like, hey. Like, kid's talented, but he's getting responsibilities he's never had before. Like, this is one where, like, Phillips has checked all of the boxes in the AHL, and Pelche probably has too. Zari still has a couple that he's taking care of. How do you think he's kind of handled some of the increased responsibilities thrust upon him this season?
Yeah, his numbers don't lie, and he's progressively gotten better as this season goes on. And it's interesting you mention that, because I remember when Chris, and we're just talking, sorry to sort of divert off a topic, but you're talking about everybody wanting everybody called up. But the thing is, you need to heed a little bit of patience in this kind of a situation. Is you want to see Connor come up, but you want to see him develop as a player and become a two-way player, not just somebody that can put up points. And that can be the same for the blue line. Chris Tanev goes down with the injury. We don't know how long he's going to be out, and people, okay, call up Jeremy Poirier or call up Jan Kuznetsov. You can't just do that, because these players, especially Jeremy Poirier, they need to develop, and they need to develop as professionals coming into their rookie and or sophomore seasons. So development is key, and I know you want to bring everybody up, but just give them a chance to grow, because this coaching staff is doing really good things.
It's funny you bring up Poirier, because he's one of the ones that I want to tick off my box in terms of asking you about. Nobody's questioning the offensive acumen that he has. Defense has always been the issue from his draft year, from his time in St. John. So as a first-year pro, how have you seen him grow and adapt in the responsibilities of playing a 200-foot game, whereas in junior he could probably get away with just focusing on the offensive end of things because he was so elite at it?
Yeah, and that part is a work in progress, right? Because he can quarterback your power play, but you also want him to defend. So he's getting more responsibility. He's being shifted through all three pairings. And it's funny, he actually hasn't been paired up with Jan Kuznetsov as of yet at home. He could have been on the road and I may have missed it. But that to me is so interesting, because if you could have the perfect defender, it'd probably be the combination of those two, and just knowing that they played together junior. But he's been good, and he scored two of the more important goals in this team's history. Obviously, the first ever goal as well as the first ever overtime goal. So he scored key goals, but now it's defending on those key goals, and it's coming. And he's been given more responsibility. But as we get into the nitty-gritty of this season, I'm curious to see how he develops, especially with the postseason looming.
Chatting with Sandra Persina, the voice of the Calgary Wranglers, here on Sportsnet today. I've noticed a few times when talking about the forward group, I guess specifically, you've mentioned, like, this is a guy who can play like up and down the lineup. He can do a whole lot of things. It does kind of feel like that's the type of identity that this organization with the Flames working with the Wranglers is trying to establish. Have we just been lucky in picking out like the six guys who are that, or is it actually the kind of like an organizational thing? Like, let's try to get these guys who can be flexible and play in different scenarios.
Interesting you mentioned that, because last year Mitch Love was doing exactly that, and they went on a really decent run in the Calder Cup. And then they lose a couple of key players, like Justin Kirkland was there, Byron Fraze. And I thought to myself, who's going to fill these roles, and will they be able to do it up here in Calgary? And it's just been seamless. So they're rolling all four lines, and it's a next man up mentality, even though at one point you had Zahorna up, who essentially is the team's first line center. Matthew Phillips was up at that time. Then you've seen Jacob Pelche go up. Walker Duehr, who's basically a jack of all trades, and you can throw him in sort of any sort of a situation. For the blue line, Dennis Gilbert goes, okay, Meloche is going to play more minutes. Or it's just, they've figured it out. And what I really like about this group is they don't ride the highs too high, and they don't ride the lows too low. Very even keel. It's just, here I am with the cliches, but it's shift by shift with this group. And I hate to trot it out, but it is the truth.
Do we let you get through a full segment talking Calgary Wranglers without mentioning Dustin Wolfe? Or could I just say the words Dustin Wolfe and you'll run with it from there? Because I'm sure that that's a hot topic that you're constantly asked about.
It's incredible. People are so fascinated with him in other markets. And I just did a podcast over the weekend with an AHL blog, and everybody wants to talk about him and know about him. But numbers don't lie. He's leading the AHL in wins, tied for shutout lead. His other numbers, I think, are in the top two or three. He is as advertised and then some. And I'm so curious to see where his journey leads him, because we talk a lot about small goalies, but he doesn't look small. Like, it's interesting. He makes himself look big. He never cheats. He's always on the post when he needs to be. He can go from post to post. His butterfly style is fantastic. And even if he lets in, let's say, a 50-50 goal, you would never tell that it's phasing him or bothering him. He just puts on his skates and gets back to business. And I usually get to the arena about 90 minutes before puck drop, and you're kind of setting your things up. And there's only one player that's always out on the bench looking at everything before I get there, and that's Dustin Wolf. And doesn't look up. He's got his headphones in. I think we joked about this. He's got his Gatorade there, and he's just looking at the ice. And the only time I saw him look up was once at the Jumbotron when Canada and USA were playing in the World Juniors in a preliminary round game. He saw USA scored, kind of smirked to himself, and then we know how the game ended. But he's got a routine. He sticks to the routine. And I think he's got a really good mental health coach, whoever is working with him, in terms of just living up to the expectations of being in an NHL market. And fans love him. He's got his own tunes. He's got his own, I don't want to call him like a walk-up song, but he's got his own anthems at the Saddle Dome. He's got his own sound effects. I mean, he I think, is the heartbeat, too, of this team. If you were to pick players, it would be Sutter and Wolf.
The Calgary Wranglers back in action Thursday and Friday against Bakersfield. It is in town, so I'm assuming you will be on the call for those. Where can people find you? Social media.
Social
whatever
media.
Whatever you're doing.
Well, right
at the Saddle Dome, Pete. She's going to be at the game.
Yeah, sorry.
I will. Esprusina on Twitter. I'm not super into social media these days, but that's the best place you can find me. And if you see me, give me a wave. I do love talking to Wranglers fans and hockey fans in general in this city. And I'm just grateful for everybody who's supported along the way. Like you guys, I hope people know that this isn't a role that I take lightly. I find that it's a privilege, and I hope people have patience with me and allow me to grow in the role, because I know it's sometimes jarring. And let's be honest, I know it's jarring sometimes hearing a woman do men's play by play. So thank you for giving me the opportunity. I hope we can all enjoy this season together, because I'm going to say it. I think this team is special.
It seems like there's something really cool going on, and you've deserved an opportunity like this for probably longer than I've known you. Very proud of you for what you are accomplishing. Yes, Sandra Brasina, thank you very much stopping by. She's in studio, so she wasn't on the phone. If she was, we wouldn't have had the headphone issues at the beginning.
That's right.
And it would have been on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, brought to you by Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, using the same secret recipe since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive in the Northeast. Takeout or delivery at 403-248-3344. We will break, and when we come back, it is time for us to harshly or not grade the Calgary Flames. Report cards are being handed out as we start the Sports Drive at 5 next.